Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Launching a new business? 99 Designs is your number one choice for quality design at an affordable price. Start your next design project at 99designs.com/hack and get a $99 upgrade for free.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so glad you decided to join me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today helps startups and companies attract new clients online. He is the co-founder of Hubstaff.com, which allows businesses to manage their remote staff by tracking time and activity levels, providing screenshots, and calculating employee payments. Hubstaff allows us to see exactly what virtual teams are working on so we can track expenses to specific projects. My guest is also a self-published author, a consultant, and a father of two. Now, let's hack Dave Nivote. Before we get started, I want to thank today's sponsor, 99 Designs. If you're like many listeners, you're in the early stages of getting your business off the ground. Your to-do list may seem like it's a mile long, but there's one task you should tackle sooner than later: your branding. Businesses can get maximum creativity with 99 Designs, the online marketplace where dozens of designers compete to deliver the best design. You get to choose from ideas created just for you from awesome designers around the world. When you're just starting out, of course you'll want to get your logo designed, but 99 Design also makes it easy to round out your visual identity with other designs too, like stationery, a great website, or whatever else your business needs. Your brand could very well be the best business investment you'll make. Get the help you need at 99 Designs. When you're ready to bring your brand to life, visit 99designs.com/hack. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you'll get a free $99 upgrade to use on your first design. That's 99designs.com/hack. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have another very, very special guest. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure. This is going to be fun. Dave, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Taking risks.
Fair enough.
Yeah. What I mean by that is, like, you know, not being afraid to go after it and go after several things. So it's a game of, you know, it's a numbers game. And it's like, if you're willing to try several things and, you know, put, you know, the more you cast, the more chances are you're going to get a bite, right?
Yeah.
And so then what I'm saying is, like, I'm not afraid to go after an idea. I know it's going to take time. I know it's going to be hard. But, you know, until you can start talking to customers and not be afraid to put yourself out there, you know, the chance of success is pretty low.
Yeah, totally. And is this something you had to kind of learn the hard way, or have you never been the person who sort of goes after the shiny object? And the fact that where you say that you know it's going to be work and you know it's going to be hard, it's not going to just be an easy win with any of it. Mm-hmm. Is this something you had to kind of adapt to and you learned a hard way, or is this something that you've...
No, I just think that's in my nature. I think it's in my blood. Yeah, and I just think that it's... I mean, I'm the guy that was mowing lawns at, you know, 12. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that's just the way it's always been. And I've always enjoyed going out and trying to discover new ways of doing things and potentially better ways of doing things. And just always enjoyed the feeling of, you know, making a buck for myself, you know? And so I think that's what kind of pushed me towards being an entrepreneur in the first place.
So, all right. So there seems to be then this time, I want to kind of figure out where this happened for you, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when we typically don't realize it at the time, I don't think, but looking back, where something happened and we either have this calling to make something big in the world, or we find we simply can't work for somebody else anymore. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me which side of the fence you fall on there, Dave? And then when that was, between mowing lawns to now, where did this happen when you look back?
Yeah. So, I mean, I went to college like I think the vast majority of, you know, entrepreneurs probably do, at least online entrepreneurs, right? There becomes a time where, you know, you're, I think, you know, in high school, no one really understands what they're going to do for the most part, or at least the vast majority don't. You go to college as a typical kind of path. And then it's kind of like after, you know, no one understands even what they want to do when they're in college. And the ultimate, you know, I think what generally happens is that they go and get a job because you've got to make money. You've got to pay the bills. You know, there's this big realization that now you've got to kind of evolve into the workforce. And I think that's when a lot of stuff happens, you know. So mine happened when I went to go work for a very large company, and I realized that I wasn't challenged at all in that company. Like, it was totally different than what I thought. I couldn't make any moves. I could not change the game in that large corporation. I could the only thing I could do is perform to the best of my abilities. And potentially, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, I could be in a position where I wanted to be financially, right? I mean, I just couldn't change the game. And I needed to be the person that changed the game. You know, that's the way I felt.
Yeah. And so when you decided that, how did you make the transition from working for this giant company straight out of college, which is a very common path,
right?
I mean, in North America, right?
Right.
You're right. It totally is. So how did you sort of like side hustle it and try and figure stuff out?
Yeah, totally. I built a golf business on the side. You know, I woke up at 5:30 in the morning. I made a commute, an hour long commute north of Chicago. I worked 8 hours a day. During that 8 hours, for the most part, I was thinking about my side business. And on the way home during the hour commute, if I took the train, I was working on my business. And if I took, you know, my car, I was thinking about it. And then I got home, had some dinner, and I worked for another 3 hours, and then I did it all over again. Yeah. So it was a period of just putting everything I had towards this new venture.
How long did you do that for?
6 months.
Wow. And why golf?
Golf, you know, I got a, you know, like an online course. Well, back in the day, back in this like 2004, it wasn't even online. It was physical. It was like mailed to my address in this big bulky container. And
are you going to tell us which one?
Yeah. You know, I don't even remember the name of it even. It was by Terry Dean. It's the guy who wrote it. I don't remember the name of it. It was like, how to make money online or something like that.
Yeah, totally. No, I know that name, and I'm from that era too. So I was wondering.
Yeah. Cool. So it was like, you know, I don't even remember the exact name of the course, but it was like, you know, it was good, man. It taught me like a lot about advertising and copywriting, and it told me where to get my start. Now, today you could learn all the information just in blog posts for sure. There's nothing that like, but back then that information just wasn't readily available. It's a brand new kind of thing.
And nobody gave that stuff out. Now everybody, it's like content marketing, right? Everyone just gives it out, doles it out for free.
Totally changed. Yeah. So, I mean, to answer your question, why golf? I mean, in that course, you know, he taught me that you have to find a hungry market, somebody that has a pain point that is like ready to make an impulse kind of purchase. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, I guess the main part is that pain. And so golf was something that I was into at the time. And I think it was between like golf and poker were the two that I were looking at.
Two things you're into at the time.
Yeah. So those are the two things. And, you know, golf just happened to be it, man. I think, you know, it's one of those things, man, where I think that I think that I was, you know, kind of like, it was luck, man. It was in the right place at the right time. But again, if I had been afraid to go do that at the time, if I wouldn't be willing to actually just, you know, create the website, even though I had no idea how to create websites, if I didn't have the ability or the inner strength, I guess you could say, to try to write headlines, even though headlines is something that was totally new to me, you know, never would have happened. And I never would have probably been where I am today.
Yeah, that's cool. Are you still in the golf game?
I am. You know, I sold half the company, and the company now is kind of like, it's just kind of dead. I've moved on like twice over now, and it's just things die out pretty quick if you don't pay attention to them.
They do. Yeah, totally, totally. All right. So you are excellent at taking risks and knowing that success is a game of numbers. So you got to keep casting.
Yeah.
And every blog post now, right? Every expert talks about 80-20. Do 20%, get 80% of the results. Mm-hmm. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest.
Yeah.
Dave, can you tell me something in business that you are absolutely not good at?
Yeah, I mean, that whole process is something that I'm still totally learning and still, it's very hard to do that. But like something that I'm not good at would be like paid advertising.
Oh, wow.
You know, so
I thought that was what you did.
Well, it's what I did back then because it was easy back then. Yeah. It was like, okay, you make a headline and then you go into your AdWords account and you just throw them all in one ad group and then you go from there. Now you've got to have your YouTube ads set up. You've got to have your so many different ad groups set up in AdWords. You've got to know Facebook advertising. I mean, it is a whole big world out there now that didn't exist back then when I did it.
I know, it's insane actually. And I fully don't understand it either.
Yeah.
So do you guys use paid advertising in Hubstaff?
We have not found a way to really scale paid advertising yet.
Really?
So we do it. And so right now we've got some Facebook ads running. We've got some Google ads running. We do not have YouTube yet. We've started experimenting a little bit with sending traffic to blog posts that are more like content, like what's the name of it? Like Outbrain or like Taboolia or whatever the name is of it. But so like we've started with that stuff, but we have not found a profitable campaign really yet, if that makes any sense. We can like kind of like break even, but it's not something that's we've been able to scale our business with. Part of that is because of the size of the market. Like coming from golf, right? Golf is a very big market for B2C market. You know, online. And so you're dealing with the individuals, mm-hmm. business owner that, well, you're dealing with individuals that have a pain and they need something now. And there's a lot of them. So you're dealing with people with personal budgets. And then, but Hubstaff, what I do now is B2B and it's a lot different because it's, you know, you're dealing with entrepreneurs, very time starved people. This is not their habit. It's not what they want to be doing at that point in time. So the market is very different for B2B.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right, Dave, we're going to move on to ideas and projects. Projects, obviously a very, very loose term, can be a whole new sort of business venture or something within an existing business. But just for ideas, before you even get to projects, to coming up with these ideas, would you consider yourself like a serial idea starting person?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of ideas. I think it's hard because it's, you know, you can only do so much for sure. And I have to continually tell myself, no, you know, we don't want to go and distract ourselves, you know. But yeah, man, there's a lot of ideas that I have that we could do if we could, you know, do, right, like multiple things. But yeah, right now, you know, actually what I'm trying to do is focus in and focus on the core business.
Which is Hubstaff.
Yeah.
Right. And will there be a point or do you think that you... Do you get that weird entrepreneurial sort of itch where it's like Hubstaff is going well and it's like, oh, I'd love to start something else maybe too on the side?
Yeah, for me, you know, I love what I do. I love Hubstaff. I love it with, you know, it's my baby, you know, and it's, I've got a great partner. I've got a great we have a very solid foundation and the software is awesome, you know, and that goes a long, long way to helping us focus on the core business that we have. That being said, you know, like I think what it is more than anything is a feeling of missed potential. It's opportunity costs. Like, where is the highest ROI going to be? Is the ROI going to come from, you know, doubling down and putting all our energy into one product that's doing really well right now? Do you go deep into that product? Or would it be smarter to invest somewhere else, for example, like development resources, like right now, for example, we have like 8 or maybe like 7 programmers. So you take that team or at least a subset of that team and build out another product that, you know, you can monetize in other ways or in, you know, so we can take a lot of the knowledge that we've gained from starting this first product and like build another one 3 times faster, right? So it's like, and then that brings in a whole new demographic of people that may CrossFit into what you're currently selling. And there's a lot of things to consider there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the main thing for us is like, what's the smart thing to do?
And so you've decided though to double down on what it is you do?
For the present, time.
Yes. That could change tomorrow. Who knows?
That could change tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, right now we're focused on like other, we're focused on building other things out, but those other things, you know, are all going to feed into Hubstaff.
Yeah. Excellent. And how, well, I guess, first of all, where did you guys come up with even the idea of Hubstaff?
I have been doing online business now for a long time, you know, 10 plus years. And back in 2008, I was searching for a product that did this. My main pain point in my life was dealing with all the moving parts in a business, you know, just all the admin, why projects weren't moving forward, you know. And I had a physical office out in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I had about 8 people in that office. And it was just a, like, when I came home at night, man, all I could think about was like, dang, like this feeling of stress because, you know, Joe's doing this, but it's not really moving forward. We need this to happen so we can, it's like a big like Gantt chart that is hard to control because you don't have any vision into what anyone was doing. And this is kind of the time when like today it's a lot easier because you have like these project management softwares that you can use that can help you do this. But back then, man, we were doing things like in Excel and it was just this nasty Excel and email. And it was harder to manage, you know, back then. So I was like searching for this product. It didn't exist. So I kind of got it in the back of my mind that, you know, I'd love to do something like this. And when the opportunity came, you know, 3 years later, I jumped on it.
Wow. That's cool. And the opportunity came because you met your co-founders or?
The opportunity came because I understand.
Because I know my listeners like sitting here like, hey, where did that opportunity come from?
Yeah. No, so the very quick explanation of it is that I was in an e-commerce business at the time and I had no idea about software. The opportunity came because I threw myself into another business. I bought a business that was software oriented because I wanted to learn software. I felt like it was the place to be. I felt like, you know, it was what I want. I felt like it was easier to sell. And so I moved into software through an intermediate kind of opportunity. I was kind of hired on to run the company, but I also put money into the company, put my personal money into the company. So I owned like 18% of it, 20% of it. And I ran that for like 4 years. And then I understood and could make more decisions. And then when I was looking for a new product after that, that's when, you know, I went for Hubstaff.
And you met your co-founders though?
I met my co-founder through LinkedIn and I found him through LinkedIn.
Really? Wow. See, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, I mean, it's not like an existing relationship or...
No, I had to sell him. I had to search him out and sell him on this idea. He did not like it and I had to sell him on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How long did that take? Like how many tries does it take when it's like, well, no, man, because I've been through that too. And I've had people being like, no, nah, and then you got to keep pushing.
Yeah. I've got a full blog post. So I write about like my experiences in growing this business and I have a full post like on this topic. But so like to make it, you know, to make a long story short, but I mean, I had to court him into the idea of both myself as an entrepreneur and the idea, because he's a smart guy and he has lots of opportunity, yeah, and the idea for him to jump in on this specific product. So it was like, what makes you right as the entrepreneur? And then what makes this product right as a product? And I had to sell him on both those things. And when I did that, so, you know, that took a, you know, 2 or 3 in-person meetings. He lives where I live in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And so it took 2 or 3 in-person meetings, probably, you know, 3 or 4 phone calls and, you know, 30 emails.
Wow.
To do that.
You don't give up easy, do you?
Yeah, I mean, well, the whole time, it wasn't like the whole time was like me.
Right.
It was us getting to know. It was a process of us getting to know each other. Right.
Yeah, which it is, right? And always from the outside, though, it always seems like, oh, he had these connections from somewhere else. But it's like, no, you made that connection.
Yeah, you have to go out and make it, man.
Yeah. So did you intentionally look for somebody local with you?
I did.
You did, eh? Wow.
I don't, and that's not required by any means. The software that I build is all about remote, but I really felt like, you know, I wanted that person. Cause I mean, I've been in business now for so long that like, I know that if I'm going to commit to this thing, it's going to be, you know, a 7-day-a-week thing. Like business is on my mind all day long, every day, no matter what I'm doing, pretty much. It's very hard to turn off. And, you know, for me, that commitment from my partner, we did a 50-50 deal. And, you know, it's like, I wanted him to have that same mindset, and I needed, you know, like local was important to me for that reason, if it makes any sense.
Oh, it totally does make sense. Does the 50-50 deal, do you think that's kind of an essential to?
It is, totally.
Why do you think that?
Well, because I've discussed it in depth with him, and I needed that because I, as the kind of the founding person that wanted to build this company, I mean, I needed that because I know I'm building software and I know how important it is to have somebody driving that side of the business. I mean, truly driving it. I don't want to drive it. I can't drive it effectively if I'm going to build a product that's going to realistically be like a $20 million company someday, right? I can't build that as a non-tech person. I don't think I can, at least. I still don't think I can. I couldn't do the job that he did. So that's number one. Number two, you know, like I was at the point in my life where, you know, like if you're going to give me two deals, I'll take 50% of something that has a higher likelihood of success because the other person is driven and it's a 50-50 deal versus like giving somebody 10% and like, you know, just having them not be fully committed to the project. And then I've got like, I'm like a year and a half into this project and it's like, why isn't this thing taken off? Because I don't have my partner's full support, you know? So yeah, I love the 50-50 partnership deal. And I know lots of people say that, you know, hey, it's not supposed to do that, but man, I wouldn't do it any other way, to be honest.
Yeah. I absolutely, absolutely, absolutely agree with you, man. And I've had that discussion with other people, and anything I've ever been part of has been 50-50, or if there's three people involved, mm-hmm. And you hit it totally by one thing. It's better to have half of like something huge than all of something that is nothing.
Yeah.
And then also the fact of you can sell the person on the idea to join you, but then they only have 10%. They're just not invested in it.
Right.
They're not, and they're not going to care.
And the other thing too, is that like, you know, especially if you're looking for that development side of the business, I mean, the whole development world is very much built on like a per hour basis. So that's what they measure on. So they're measuring their investment into the business based on what the opportunity cost of if they went to go work, you know, 6 hours a day for somebody else at $100 an hour, whatever it is, right? So like if you want to, so they build the backbone of your company and from a technology standpoint, at $0 an hour, right? And that saves your company a lot of money. If you have somebody doing that work, that foundational level work for you or for the business at no cost, obviously, that's the only way we could do it. You know, I didn't want to pay that out of pocket.
Yeah, exactly. No, man, I love it. It's great. All right, Dave, we're going to wrap up on something I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So it seems as entrepreneurs, we are, and dreamers, right? We're constantly looking forward and pushing forward, setting goals 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 10 years out. Mm-hmm. And before we even hit these goals, we set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future because we're just, and everything will be better in 6 months when my business does this. In 3 months, when I get to do this, it's better. When I get to do this in a year, everything will be better. I'll be successful then. But we never seem to quite get there. And we oftentimes, I know you've been in this game a long time now, and you've done a lot of really, really cool things. But I would love it right now, Dave, if you could stop, turn around, and look at all this stuff you have come through, everything you've learned, everything you've built, everything that's done well, done terribly. But just tell me how you feel about what you've accomplished to date.
Yeah, I mean, I feel incredibly proud. I feel proud, and I feel very secure at this point in time. Those are the two words I would use.
Nice. Proud and secure.
Yeah.
And secure is usually the one thing that's their excuse for not taking the leap into entrepreneurship. They think that having a job somewhere is more secure than doing it yourself.
Just to close that out real quick, like, you know, I feel secure because I have, you're going to learn so much more by going and trying something by yourself. You're forced to learn a very broad set of skills. I feel like if worse came to worse, like I would have any one of like 300 startups begging me to have me on board, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
So,
yeah, that's very cool. All right, Dave, this has been a lot of fun. We have got to talk about your business in passing, but could you specifically tell the listener where they can find out more about you and your business?
Yeah, so I run Hubstaff, hubstaff.com, you know, at hubstaff.com is our at Hubstaff is our Twitter ID. I blog about, you know, a lot of the stuff we talked about today, about my challenges with growing a SaaS-based business. It's just blog.hubstaff.com, and those will be the places that you can find me. My email is dave@hubstaff.com.
Excellent. Are you on Twitter?
I am. DeanAvote, at DeanAvote.
Excellent. So hubstaff.com, blog at hubstaff.com, and DeanAvote at on Twitter. I'll link to all those in the show notes, so they are very, very easy for you to find. And once again, Dave, please, thanks for your time, and please keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's really, really awesome to watch.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that was a lot of fun. Dave is a smart, smart guy who, I like how he's sort of evolved in online businesses from like a niche sort of business, like where so many people start with just like figuring out like how the internet works with like golf. And then he like took that to this huge level and then went on to now SaaS and like software as a service product, which has a huge, huge, massive, big potential. And I really, really dig that about the conversation. But going back over the conversation, I have all these things that he talked about, all these things that he mentioned that were really, really important and key and smart. Yet there was one thing. There was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Back in 2008, I was searching for a product that did this. My main pain point in my life was dealing with all the moving parts in a business, you know, just all the admin, why projects weren't moving forward, you know, and I had a physical office out in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I had about 8 people in that office. And it was just like, when I came home at night, man, all I could think about was like, dang, like this feeling of stress.
And that's the hack. Yes, Dave, that exactly. I do not know how many times I've been asked this question. Where do you come up with an idea for a product to create or a service to create or a business in general? Dave just nailed it. It's that scratching your own itch. He had this pain point in his life. He had this problem where he was trying to do something in his business or online and couldn't be done with what he could find out there. And we all have these things. This is the whole, to me, part of the mind shift change or mindset change of moving from just being a consumer to being a producer, because this will make you start to see and deal with things in ways that you, when you're looking for something and you can't find it, or when you're dealing with something and it's too awkward or it doesn't work the way you think it should, rather than just grumbling about it, you'll start to think, maybe I should actually just start this business. Maybe I should just find a co-founder on LinkedIn, like Dave did, and create this software and then sell it. These are where the ideas come from. This is a recurring theme of people that I've been talking to on this show, of scratching your own itch. It really, really, really is such a great way to find a business idea. It's not the only way. It maybe isn't even always the best way, depending on what they are, but it definitely gets the wheels turning in your head for products and ideas that you could possibly create and take to market. So I love how you said that. I love how you've done that with Hubstaff. I love how then you also weren't technical, so you went and found somebody to build it. It's brilliant. It's awesome. And that's totally what it takes. It just takes doing it and scratching your own itch. So thanks, Dave. All right. Well, as always, this has been so much fun, and I really, really, really do appreciate you stopping by. If you have not had a chance, hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes. You will be able to leave me a rating and a review. It'll help the show so much, and I'll be so happy. Or maybe you don't even like iTunes. How about Stitcher? hacktheentrepreneur.com/Stitcher. A wicked app for your Android phone or your iPhone, if you wish. And it's a great place to seek out new podcasts. But if you could go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/Stitcher, not only will it take you to Stitcher, it'll also take you to the Hack the Entrepreneur page where you could also leave me a rating and review. Both of these would be greatly, greatly, greatly appreciated. It helps so much. All right. Thank you. It's been fun. And please, just until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.